The year, 1971. The place, Portland, Oregon. The scene, the race to a deadline. Tim Rowan is frantically writing the finish to his thesis before graduation from Reed College. Our friend Helen remembers this well.
Well, I got this frantic call from Tim saying, I'm not going to meet the deadline. Can you come help?
Now, for those of you under 30, this was before computers, before in-home printers, before the internet. The tools at hand were pen and paper, a typewriter, a photocopier, lots of coffee, and legs to run the finished paper to the dean's office.
And I said, well, I can't type. I'll ask Dee. And of course, you know what Tim's handwriting is like. I mean, it's completely illegible. So I wrote out by hand and Dee typed. And we stayed up, I think, for 3 days and three nights. I mean, we were completely out of our minds. We were kept going with cups of coffee, and that was about it. It was at your place.
Yes, it was at my place. I do remember it well.
Yes, yes. Well, then we got down to the deadline itself, and nothing was allowed to come in even a minute after the deadline. And we had to go and photocopy, and in those days, you know, photocopying was a new thing, and they didn't have very good machines. And so we're down in some basement at Reed College frantically copying, and we got the stuff together, and we literally had seconds to the deadline, and we got halfway up the stairs, and we threw the entire thing into the office before they closed the door.
This was my introduction to the Hatch Act. Tim's thesis was on the Hatch Act. The Hatch Act has been much in the news in the past few months. The full name is the Hatch Act of 1939, an act to prevent pernicious political activities. The Hatch Act forbids the use of government resources to support political campaigns and candidate election efforts. All federal employees are covered by the Hatch Act, with the exception of the president and the vice president. So, White House staff, federal appointees, all federal civilian executive branch employees, and all employees of all federal agencies are covered by the Hatch Act, including the State Department, Department of Defense, FBI, CDC, DHS, EPA, and the Post Office are all covered by the Hatch Act. The Hatch Act was passed in reaction to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a Democrat. In 1938, a series of newspaper articles exposed Works Project Administration patronage and political contributions in return for employment, prompting an investigation. Political contributions in return for employment. More about that later when we talk about the post office. The 1939 Hatch Act restricts political campaign activities by federal employees. It prohibits using any public funds for electoral purposes. Now, during the Republican National Convention in the White House Rose Garden, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo gave a video speech. Since Pompeo is part of the National Security Council, he is subject to further restrictions of the Hatch Act. Such federal employees who have more restrictions cannot take an active part in partisan political campaigns. Two law professors, including one who served as President George W. Bush's ethics advisor, have filed a complaint to the U.S. Office of Special Counsel, accusing Secretary of State Mike Pompeo of violating federal laws by addressing the Republican National Convention while on a diplomatic trip overseas. His speech praised Trump's foreign policy and endorsed his reelection. Besides obviously violating the Hatch Act, the complaint said that there was no evidence that the Republican Party or the Trump campaign had covered the cost of flying Mr. Pompeo and State Department staff members to Jerusalem on a government jet. I asked him what he thought, since he is so familiar with the Hatch Act. This is what he told me. So, there are a couple of aspects of the Act that are very good. One is forbidding the use of government resources to support political campaigns and candidate election efforts. Of course, all politicians, regardless of level, ought to be allowed to be as politically involved and active as they wish, but on their own nickel and on their own time and at a private location. The problems arise when that home happens to be a government building maintained at taxpayers' expense. Never before the Trumps has the White House been used for a campaign nor been part of a party convention. Now, supposedly, what is prohibited is not private activity, but coercion to donate, to force activity, and to use public resources for private political gain. To many, the current state of affairs, though, is that the little guy still doesn't quite know what is allowed and not allowed, and the political appointees at the highest levels don't really care what's allowed, as they know they're not likely to be held to account. So the Mike Pompeos and the Kellyanne Conways of the world don't give a damn, pretty much.
Ah, Kellyanne Conway.
The Office of Special Counsel and the Merit Systems Protection Board are responsible for enforcement of the Hatch Act. The Office of Special Counsel confirmed in a report to Trump that Conway violated the measure on multiple occasions by promoting his re-election campaign and attacking Democrats. The office recommended Conway be fired over the offenses and stated that her actions, quote, erode the principal foundation of our democratic system, the rule of law. There were two separate television interviews in which she advocated for and against candidates in the 2017 Alabama special election for the U.S. Senate. When she was asked about the Hatch Act, she stated, "If you're trying to silence me through the Hatch Act, it's not going to work. Just let me know when the jail sentence starts." But she wasn't the only one who didn't give a damn. In June of 2019, the Office of Special Counsel sent a letter to Trump recommending that White House Counselor Kellyanne Conway be removed from federal service for repeatedly violating the Hatch Act. Trump, when asked at a press conference, stated he thought the provision violated her free speech rights. Apparently, this president does not understand the law. There are many instances where speech is restricted. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. You can't repeatedly encourage someone to commit suicide. And there are lies you can be prosecuted for, Mr. Trump, just so you know. And I can't say, "F*** you and your f***ing bitch and your f***ing on the radio. The Hatch Act may be a previously overlooked area of the law, but it is one that protects our democracy, ensuring that government officials do not use the power or resources of their government positions to win partisan political fights or advocate for an electoral outcome. Abuse of official positions for political advocacy is widespread in the Trump administration, ranging from tweets from officials' government accounts using the president's campaign slogan to diverting official travel to attend events to help candidates in the midterm elections. There have been 13 complaints and 11 reprimands of officials in the Trump administration. And as taxpayers, we are paying for salaries and expenses for these government officials to endorse a political candidate, one that you may or may not like." Oh, and an update. Kellyanne Conway has since left the White House to spend more time arguing with her family. So, if you aren't a federal employee, why should you care about any of this? And if you are rich and maybe even support that candidate, why should you care? Well, there is one compelling reason. The Trump campaign is bellowing loudly about law and order, and all the while, they are violating the law. The Hatch Act is only one example of violation of law by this administration. Let me give you some more. Take the Emoluments Clause. This might not be what you think. Don't think, try some of these emollients on your hamburger. Or, hey, put some emollients on that rash. No, an emolument is an advantage, profit, or gain received as a result of one's employment or one's holding of office. Trump is accepting numerous financial benefits from foreign governments through his business empire without having first obtained the consent of Congress. And, unless you live in a cave, there is one big violation of the law. On January 16, 2020, the Government Accountability Office said the White House Office of Management and Budget, directed by the President himself, violated the law when it withheld nearly $400 million to Ukraine for a policy reason, even though the funds had been allocated by Congress. This is what Trump was impeached for on December 18, 2019. Most of the Senate Republicans, however, didn't seem to care. On February 5th, 2020, he was acquitted. And do you know who Louis DeJoy is? DeJoy is the Postmaster General. He is a businessman with no experience in the post office, but a lot of experience in donating to the Republicans. He has donated over $1.2 million to the Republican Party since 2016. Is that how he got his job? I spoke with several people who have had federal employment, both in the post office and in the census count. Susan Vesna has an intimate knowledge of the postal system.
I was a postmaster for the United States Postal Service for 25 years. I started as a letter carrier in the streets of Tacoma and worked my way up to office manager in Chandler, Arizona. And then I was in charge of over 100 carriers. So I definitely worked directly with the government agencies when it was census time and when it was voting time to make sure that all the information got where it was supposed to go in a very timely manner. And I'm still very active with I'm a retired postmaster, but I'm also the vice president of the United Postmasters and Managers of America in Washington State. So I'm in the front lines right now with what is happening. He has backed off because of the pressure. However, he has already pulled the sorting machines from many postal facilities. So the capability of fast sorting of the mail to get it to where it needs to go is greatly diminished. And he is not going to put the machines back until after the election.
The damage is done.
Correct.
I understand that there's at least four states that are bringing criminal charges against him.
Yes, and Washington is one of them.
There are more states signing on to that now. There are at least 20 states filing federal lawsuits against DeJoy. Along with those states, the League of Women Voters is one of the plaintiffs, along with Common Cause and the National Urban League, citing that DeJoy intentionally made sweeping changes to the Postal Service's policies and procedures with the purpose and intent to sabotage mail-in voting in the upcoming 2020 national elections. These actions include decommissioning mail sorting machines and removing post office collection boxes en masse, curtailing the ability of postal workers to timely deliver mail by prohibiting overtime and disallowing extra delivery trips, and in a sudden and inexplicable break with long-standing Postal Service policy, deprioritizing the delivery of election mail. By DeJoy's own admission, these changes will cause ballots to go uncounted. In a closely contested election with a high percentage of voting by mail, the failure to count mail ballots could influence election outcomes. The lawsuit requests the court to weigh in on whether the U.S. Constitution was violated and take immediate steps to mitigate the damage caused by these changes.
So, Susan, are they really trying to destroy the post office?
Yes, they are. And the Postmaster General who's in now donated over $1 million to the current president's campaign. So it was a favor to him to put him in this position, because what they want to do is destroy the Postal Service and then be able to parcel it out for profit to the companies that they own. The Postal Service has never, it's mandated not to make a profit. And the Postal Service is the only agency in the federal government that has to prepay its retirement benefits to employees that they haven't even hired yet. And that's been in effect for about 20 some years. When I was an active postmaster, I used to go to Washington, D.C. every single year and lobby to get that removed. The post office is the highest rated government agency with the general public, and our current president is trying to destroy it.
Prepaid for employees that aren't even there yet.
Right.
They're not even born yet. They have to prepay 75 years. Some of these people are not even born.
That is correct.
Meleke hits the nail on the head there. And now she has worked for the census this year, a government bureau that seems to be incompetent.
Well, first of all, before I was hired, I got called at least 4 times, did I want to work for the census? And I said no, because I was concerned about COVID and I didn't want to go door to door. And about the 5th time they called me, they said, well, do you want an office job? And I said, yeah, sure. So I went in to do the office job, and it was, in my experience, it was very chaotic. They didn't really tell us who was in charge. We didn't really know who was in charge. We knew that there were 2 women there from LA because there had been some kind of problem, and they were there to try and set things straight. I think there'd been management changes. But one of the primary thing that I did in the office was to make phone calls and try and get people to come and work for the census. And typically what would happen is that I would call somebody up and they would say something like, this is the 5th time you've called me. Why don't you write this down? Why don't you take notes? Or I would say, I'll write it down. And they'll say, I've heard that before. And it was just, I felt terrible because I'd be calling these people who had been called 5 or 10 times before. One woman, she explained, you know, I've told you this before. My husband's dying. I can't work. That kind of thing. It was really, but they didn't understand the difference between a database and a spreadsheet. You know, one woman I called, she said, I thought I wanted to work for the census, but since I've gotten 5 calls in the past hour, I don't think you people are organized enough and I don't want to work for you. It was just awful. And that's kind of what happened. And all we did was call people to try and get them to work. Obviously, there was a lot of reluctance for people to go door to door because they were concerned about COVID. But I think there was more reluctance because, you know, people would be getting called 5 or 6 times and they lost confidence in the process. I lost confidence in the process.
It wasn't always like this. Zach had a much different experience.
You were part of the census crew in 2010.
Yes, I was part of the census crew back in 2010 over on the east side of the state in the area of the Tri-Cities. The point was that it was run professionally. You know, we had meetings with our leads. We had a clear, organized chain of command, chain of custody, which is like, okay, this is where you need to be. These are the people that we're having trouble with, and this is what needs to happen. We'd go out, we report back on a weekly basis. Things were efficient. We had a process, we had a system. But things have changed since then.
From what I understand, the data from the census is used in all sorts of ways.
What it means is that we have a high likelihood of undercounting urban areas, and we won't get the federal funding that we normally would get.
I mean, one thing is also like it's got a political ramification as well with apportionment. There's only a maximum of 435 House representatives. And how it's split across the 50 states, it depends upon the population they're counting. Because of this, if, say, Washington State is undercounted, all of a sudden, we might have less representatives going to Congress.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and that's major. So, okay, yeah. So we've got the Census Bureau and the post office that are have become less than functional. What else is there going on that we really don't know about?
The FEC, the Federal Elections Commission, has not had a full staff, so they can't pass any regulations because they don't have their full complement.
They can't make a quorum.
Why should you care about the FEC? This is from the Federal Election Commission's website, fec.gov. The FEC was created to promote confidence and participation in the democratic process. The FEC is the independent regulatory agency charged with administering and enforcing the federal campaign finance law. Its duties include restrictions on contributions and expenditures made to influence federal elections. A quorum is required for the agency to promulgate rules, issue advisory opinions, and decide enforcement actions. So, who's guarding the hen house? And we do have a federal election coming up.
And so, well, that's
scary.
I think that was on purpose.
Yes, that was on purpose.
Maybe I should start paying attention, huh?
Well, I kind of liken it to the parable about the frog, that if you put a frog in a pot of boiling water, he's going to jump out. But if you put a frog in a pot of cold water and then turn the heat up, by the time he realizes that he's not going to survive because the water's boiling, he's already dead. And I think that's kind of what's happening right now. Because we are being dumbed down and numbed to what is going on, because it's one thing after another that we're becoming complacent. And we just really need to figure out a way to spark people to realize that this is affecting you, you know, and I don't know how to do that, honestly.
Feeling helpless now? Well, buck up. You have two powerful tools at your disposal. One is READ. And not just Facebook, excuse me, Falsebook. There's no way to track the truth there. I would suggest that you start by reading the U.S. Constitution. It is much shorter than you might think. It will fit into your pocket, and it will show you how our government is run and what your rights are. Now that's power. And what's even more powerful?
I think the main thing is we just need to get people to get out there and vote and do whatever you can to make sure that you take your vote to a ballot box or a polling place.
Vote. Yes, read and vote. Remember to do it in that order. And speaking of frogs, two frogs fell into a bowl of milk. Having swum around the bowl, they realized that the edge of the bowl was too high and steep for them to get out. The first frog, realizing that it was useless to waste his energy by continuing to swim, since that would not get him out of the bowl, he gave up swimming and drowned. The second frog persevered, refused to give in, and gradually the milk turned to butter, until the frog was able to use it as a foothold to jump out of the bowl. So I don't know about you, but I'm going to continue making butter. So stay tuned, and we will take you on an exploration of how our government works, who is minding the store, and how you can make a difference. We can bring back power to the people.
Power to the people!